So welcome everybody to the Florida IT Professional Meetup with Andrew Mason talking about Windows Server 2016 as well as Nano Server. And once again, I'm Blaine Barton. I'm the host of the meetup, but this is the first time we're doing the online version of this. So with the further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Andrew. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Blaine. My name's Andrew Mason. I'm a principal PM in the Windows Server and Services Group. And today I want to talk about Nano Server. Basically, this is the future of Windows Server. We're resetting the server platform based on Nano Server. Since we're doing this online, not used to doing these a broad meetup like this online, so I can't see how many hands are raised if I ask if anybody's heard of Nano Server or deployed it. So we'll just move ahead. How's that? So today I want to talk a little bit about what we're hearing from all of you folks, all of our customers out there, and why we're creating Nano Server, sort of our journey up to where we got to with Nano Server. Talk some about how you manage a Nano Server machine, and then some about it being an application platform, and sort of the key piece that everybody's probably very interested in is where are we at with the technical preview for Nano Server Bits. So Nano Server is available in technical preview 4 that was released last week. So if you go download the ISO of Windows Server 2016, you'll see there's a Nano Server folder in there where you can actually create a Nano Server image and deploy it in a virtual machine or on your physical machines and try it out. I've got some details on how to do that in the slides, and on the next steps there are some links off to our deployment guide and other resources. So we'll make sure you have plenty of information tonight. So really what we've been hearing from customers for several years now is that reboots are impacting their business. You know, why do I have these bits installed on my servers that I don't need, and then I have to patch and reboot my servers and cause downtime for binaries on my servers that aren't providing any functionality to me, aren't in use. And when I do have to reboot, I need my machines back as quickly as possible. So the Windows Server images can be quite large these days when you have the full GUI installed. And so it takes a long time to install and configure all that, make sure you have the right security settings all configured. You know, in a cloud environment or with a lot of virtual machines, you're deploying large images or moving large virtual machines around across the network. That's consuming a lot of network bandwidth. And then, of course, the disk space that all requires. And on the infrastructure side, as I mentioned, you know, the OS is consuming more resources that's taking away from the services that I could run on the system. You know, I could be using those resources to provide more functionality to my users or my customers rather than just running the operating system. So really customers have been asking for a much smaller installation option, something that's more focused on just what they need to run. And so we've also been hearing, I'm sure everybody has seen a lot of these headlines over the last year and a half or 2 years about all the hacks that have been happening, people getting into systems and credit cards, stealing social security numbers. And then the last one is an interesting one, because the hackers now, when they're attacking manufacturing companies, are also starting to do things to the systems that are causing damage to the physical machines in the manufacturing plants. And this particular one was actually a smelter and took out some of their capacity for being able to create their end product. So, you know, that's a bad thing for a company as well. So we've all been hearing about these attacks, and really what this all boils down to is customers are telling us they want just the components they need and nothing more. So don't make me install pieces I don't require. Don't make me patch pieces I'm not using of an operating system. Give me just what I want. And so on the Microsoft side, our server journey started out with Windows NT back in the early 90s. And really back then, you know, a server machine was essentially a desktop tower tipped over on its side, and we called it a server box. And back in the early days, you know, there was a registry key that was really the difference between a server and a client machine. It changed some of the license values so you could have more, you know, SMB file share connections and things like that. Actually, Mark Rusinovich, his claim to fame was he discovered what that registry key was and created some tools that allowed you to change that so you could turn a client machine into a server machine. It got moved around a few times, and you know, Mark kept finding it and making it available, and so we finally just hired him, and now he's the CIO of Azure. But really back in those days, one of the great things about Windows NT and the server OS was you had all these easy GUIs that made it very easy to deploy and configure the system. Now, admin GUIs are great, and being able to use a UI to configure your servers makes it much easier to deploy and manage a server, but really those should all be running remotely. And so that's sort of what the point on the bottom of the slide is all about. Admin GUIs on servers are poison. So they're great remotely. Run them on a client, run them on a remote server jump box type machine or configuration, and use those to manage your server. But really, when you're on that server, you don't want all those pieces that a fancy admin UI requires on your server, because again, you're going to have to patch and reboot because of those things. But, you know, you can run all those UIs remotely. And by also running the UIs remotely, it separates a lot of the business logic. Too many times when the admin GUI is a local GUI, it can only be used locally. And the reason for that is a lot of the business logic is tied into the GUI itself, rather than being in the APIs and the functionality of the service. And so that's why it's a local-only GUI. So by separating the UI and making it run on a client machine or a remote server box to manage your servers, you're separating that business logic, and that gives you the advantage of being able to script and automate your deployment and management of those services and processes. So as you'll see as I go through this, remote management is going to be a big push with NanoServer. Then in sort of 2008 and 2008 R2, we started down this path of sort of the headless, smaller server installation option with Server Core. And so that was a separate installation option. At deployment time, you had to pick between Server Core or full server. And then in Server 2012 and 2012 R2, we sort of layered things on top of that. So you could start with the server with the GUI, do some configuration, and convert down to Server Core. Now, Server Core was very interesting and a good step in the right direction, but it was sort of an in-between solution in that we didn't remove all of the GUI. And so there was some functionality that would work, but there was a lot of functionality that if it required a UI, you had to run with the full GUI. There wasn't enough there to really create the full separation that we needed. And so we sort of learned from that both in Azure and the cloud platform system. So in Azure, patches and reboots do interrupt service delivery because Azure does not use live migration. And so whenever they have to patch a server, you know, there's some downtime caused both for that server and any virtual machines running on top of it. And a very large number of servers like Azure runs times a large amount of operating system resource consumption equals a lot of cost of goods. So it's very expensive to have that large server image that they're deploying. And the way they provision their machines and maintain them is they redeploy the images when a new patch comes out or they need to update something. So they're copying those large server operating system images across the network and consuming network bandwidth that could otherwise be used for providing functionality to the users of Azure. Now, with the cloud platform system, this is a solution that was released about a year ago, October of last year. Essentially, what this is a sort of a cloud in a box. You can buy 1 to 4 racks of Dell hardware with Windows Server and System Center pre-installed on it, and that gives you sort of a hosting environment. So it has the Windows Azure pack on it, so you have a UI you can use for customers to come in and provision virtual machines, but then it has System Center and virtual machine manager and everything running behind the scenes to allow you to manage and deploy all of that. And really with that, you know, we recognize the pain of all the lengthy setup time and the amount of time it takes to deploy everything. Now, in cloud platform system, we are using live migration, so patches and reboots don't result in a service disruption, as the last bullet points out there, but if you have a 4-rack deployment of that, it can support up to 8,000 VMs. If you figure each VM is at least 2 gigabytes of RAM, you're looking at 16 terabytes of virtual machines live migrating around in your network. So that's still going to have an impact on your network capacity. So really, you know, we heard what customers were saying. We realized we need that as well. We really need a server configuration that's optimized for the cloud. And so that's really where NanoServer came about. It is our just enough operating system installation option. It's optimized for modern apps, born in the cloud applications. It does support containers. Now, it does give you higher density, reduced attack surface and servicing requirements. So back to the security comments, in addition to being smaller on disk, it has a lot fewer services running. It has a lot fewer ports open. So fewer ways for the bad guys to try and get into your system and take out your environment. And it does interoperate with existing server apps. So if I build out the slide here, Server Core is still there for traditional VM workloads, legacy kind of applications. So it does give you some benefits there for things that don't run on Nano Server yet, but really the push forward and the developer target of the future for Windows Server is going to be Nano Server. For third-party applications, for the remote desktop deployments, for, you know, small businesses that might still want the UI on their servers, we still do have the server with a desktop. And so that we've actually synced up, and in TP4, you'll see that has the same experience as on Windows 10 client. So the start menu is back there and all the same functionality you get on a Windows 10 client. But Nano Server is our next step. And so Nano Server is a headless 64-bit deployment option. Now, when I say headless, it is truly headless, unlike Server Core that we often refer to as headless, but you could still RDS into a Server Core machine. You got a command prompt in a window. You could run some basic GUI tools there. None of that is possible with Nano Server. So that's really where my point about remote management is important, and I'll get into that more. But first, just to lay a little foundation, for those of you familiar with the Windows side-by-side folder, when you install Windows 10 or a server installation, even Server Core today, all the optional packages and features get copied into what's referred to as the side-by-side folder on your hard disk or in your virtual machine. And so, you know, in the future, 6 months down the road, if you want to install some new role, you know, say you want to put IIS on that machine, you're never prompted for the media. It pulls the files out of the side-by-side folder and installs them, and then you patch everything and get it all up to date. Well, that consumes disk space on your installation, and in a virtual machine model, then you have a whole bunch of VMs with binaries sitting in the side-by-side folder that you're not using, consuming disk space in your VHDs, which is consuming storage on your physical servers. With Nano Server, we've gone with what we're referring to as a zero footprint model, and that all the roles and features live outside of the Nano Server image. So there is a side-by-side folder, but all it has is a little bit of metadata, enough for the servicing stack to work, but all the roles and features are separated. So they're all cab files that you install much like you would an application. So you can use dism.exe to install them on a running Nano Server machine, or we have a script that can build an image and put in what you need before you deploy. And so that helps minimize the disk space Nano Server consumes. So as we add more roles and features, if they have additional dependencies and require pulling in additional features and functionality, rather than those ending up in the base of Nano Server or ending up in the side-by-side folder, increasing the on-disk footprint, those will be delivered as separated cab files as well. So again, a small Hyper-V machine will be possible because the Nano Server base will always remain small. Hyper-V doesn't have all those other dependencies, but Role-X may have a bunch of dependencies. If you need to run Role-X, well, only on those machines will you have that additional footprint taken up. So we're really going down this model of allowing you to pick and choose just the pieces you actually need in Nano Server. And so the roles and features we have now are, we started out sort of focused on the cloud data center. So we had a Hyper-V storage and clustering. In technical preview 4 that went out last week, we added IIS server and DNS server. So those are both available. And we have Core CLR and ASP.NET 5 support for your modern applications. Now, Nano Server does have the full Windows Server driver support. So if you have a driver that works with Windows Server 2016, that will work with Nano Server as well. So it's just a matter of getting the .env file and the .sys files for the driver and injecting those into your Nano Server image. We also have anti-malware. So for those of you that have tried out Server 2016, you'll notice that Defender's installed by default and running in Server Core and Full Server, but you can disable it if you want to use a third-party anti-malware package. Now in Nano Server, again, following that just enough OS model, rather than having it there and being disabled and consuming some disk space that, you know, if you want to use a third party, you don't need to have Defender installed and consuming space in your images. We made Defender an optional package in Nano Server. So if Defender is your anti-malware of choice, you can add that to your images. If you're using a third party, you don't have to have the Defender binaries anywhere in your image. They won't be in the side-by-side folder or anything like that. And the System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and Operations Manager agents are both available with Technical Preview 4. So you'll notice if you check out the NanoServer packages folder, the VMM agent is available in there. The Operations Manager agent shipped as part of the Operations Manager Technical Preview. So those are both available, so you can start using System Center with NanoServer now. Now, to talk some about management, and I'll have a couple of demos in this section. So, as I said, NanoServer is all about a headless server, a minimal server that gives you just the functionality you need for whatever role you're running on it, which means you have to manage it remotely. But the great thing about NanoServer is because it's built off of the same Windows Server kernel and everything, so you can use a lot of the existing tools to manage NanoServer, tools you're already familiar with. So Server Manager can connect up and manage NanoServer, Hyper-V Manager, Failover Cluster Manager, Event Viewer. Many of your MMCs connect up and manage NanoServer just like it was any other Windows Server machine on your network. Now, we also do have a version of PowerShell called PowerShell Core, which is built on top of the Core CLR. So it is very similar to the full PowerShell, lets you run all your commandlets on a NanoServer machine and also use PowerShell to remotely manage a NanoServer machine. Then we have something new, which above the bullets there is a screenshot of, and I'll do a demo of in a few minutes. It's the remote server management tools. And so this is a new set of GUI-based tools to allow you to manage NanoServer. I'll talk more about that in a couple of slides. So really the goal with remote management and NanoServer is to eliminate the need to ever sit in front of a server. So we heard a lot of feedback on Server Core about how there were a lot of things that, even though we tried to make it headless, you still had to RDP into the server to do. So, you know, if I wanted to look at the list of processes, I'd often RDP in and pull up Task Manager and see a list of processes. You know, if I want to configure the network, I had to RDP in and use NetSH or some other command line tools to do it. So really what we've focused on is let's build remote replacements of all those things so that you'll never have to touch your servers again. Then we also have PowerShell desired state configuration available in Technical Preview 4. So you can use that to also do your configuration of your NanoServer machines. And then by having Core PowerShell in there and WMI, we have full WMI support, you can do all this remotely and automated, so you can script up all this management. And DSC and PowerShell give us integration and DevOps tool chains for deployment and automation. So for scripting and remote command line management, you can use PowerShell Core, which is refactored to run on the Core CLR. That's the open source version of the CLR. Now it does give you full PowerShell language capability and remoting, so you have all your standard commandlets available. Most of the core engine components are there. One of the pieces that some people use that is not available is the workflows support. Now it can be part of a workflow, but it cannot initiate a workflow. So that would be something you'd have to do from another server machine or from a client box. And then it does have support for all the standard commandlet types. So you can use script, sim, and C# commandlets. Now, the bullet on the slide says limited set of commandlets initially. We've actually been adding a lot with each of the technical previews, so we have quite a good coverage now. You'll see there's still going to be more coming, so we're working on that. And if you have feedback on additional commandlets that you want to see us include in NanoServer, please contact me. So let me flip over here for a minute and show a PowerShell demo. Let's see.
This is our first online demo, so everybody step back, strap yourselves in.
Okay, hopefully it will all work. Can you see my screen?
Yeah, we can. And if you got ZoomIt or if you're using ZoomIt, that also helps, but no, it's not required. Oh, look at that.
How, does that help?
Oh, that's great.
All right. Awesome. So the setup I have is I actually have a couple installs of Windows Server 2016 running on my machine here. So I have, this is a full server installation. It has the full GUI on it, so I can show different management tools and things from it. And then I have NanoServer running in a couple of virtual machines. So first I'm going to create a new PS session to my first NanoServer machine here. And so it comes up and prompts me for my credentials. a very secure four-letter password. And it will return here in a moment. And now I can do my enter PS session. And now I'm connected to my NanoServer 1 box, and I'm in the administrator documents folder. And if I go back up here and run ipconfig all, I can use the same command line tools. Many of the same command line tools I would use today are all available on NanoServer, so I can get my IP configuration this way. You know, I can run hostname on the machine, NanoServer 1. So many of the command line tools that you know from Windows Server are available on NanoServer, but then we also have all the PowerShell commandlets. So I can do git net IP configuration, and that's going to give me my IP similar to ipconfig, but through PowerShell. Then I can do git wmyobject win32 computer system. Now this one's actually going to fail. This is designed to fail because git wmyobject's not available there. So there are some differences between core PowerShell and full PowerShell, but git sim instance is there. So anything you would normally do with git wmyobject, as long as you do it with git sim instance, will just work. So I'm using the same Win32 provider, or WMI provider, Win32 computer system, and looking at the name property, and it's NanoServer 1. So it's the same thing. The only thing changed in the command is instead of WMI object, it's sim instance.
Hey, Andrew, can you make it just a little bit bigger? Because I'm the actual size isn't really getting that big. Yeah, there you go.
Is that better?
That's a little better. Yep.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's in a VM, so I should have resized the resolution in there to make it even bigger. But I can do git module, and you can see I've got a bunch of different PowerShell modules already loaded. If I do git module list available, you'll see there's a bunch of additional PowerShell modules available on the system around networking. You can see PMP device, which we'll come back to in another demo. But there's a bunch of other things like BitLocker, DISM, DNS client, etc., all available on NanoServer. So, like I said, even though the bullet on the slide said limited set available, it is growing with each release, so we're adding more and more. If I do git command, you'll see quite a long list of commands scroll by. I do git service, see a relatively short list of services running on the system, much shorter than you would have on a full server machine. And then there is a registry value that's existed since server 2012, called current version server and then server levels. Now in 2012 R2, what you had in there was server core, minimal server interface, server, and then desktop experience. Well, in server 2016, we've also added a nano server value there, so you can tell in your scripts what sort of level or installation option of server you're running from by querying this registry key here. And so let me exit out and then take a look at the temp folder on my local server machine. And one of the nice things with core PowerShell is we also have all the new capabilities that they're adding in PowerShell 16. So on copy item, you now have a from session and to session options. So here I'm actually going to copy a file off the nano server machine off of my NS1 that I connected to before. I'm going to copy the DISM log file over to the local temp drive. So I don't have to do a net use and do things via SMB. I can use copy item, and you'll see it flashed by pretty quickly there. But now if I go take a look, I now have the DISM log locally on my machine. So if I have log files or crash dumps or whatever on my remote nano server machine, I can also use copy item through PowerShell to copy those over quite easily. And this doesn't require me to, you know, go change the firewall to allow SMB connections. This goes over the same port that PowerShell uses. So now what I'm going to do is show DNS server running here. So I can do my git net IP configuration again. Come on. All right, there we go. On my local machine, I'm set with an IP address of 100.100 and a DNS server of 100.5. And so now I'm going to try and resolve a DNS name that it it's going to fail. Because this doesn't exist on DNS server yet. There we go. It failed as expected. Now, if I go connect up to my nano server machine, which is another virtual machine, but is running DNS in this case, let me enter my password. Go ahead and connect to that machine. I'll see, I'll do get net IP configuration on this. And this is actually my 100.5 machine, as you can see here. And so if I run git service for DNS, you see I have DNS server and DNS client on this machine. Now I'm going to use the DNS commandlets to actually add contoso.com's own file to my DNS server. So the nice thing about DNS server on nano server is all the DNS server commandlets are available on the nano server machine. So you can use those both locally as well as remotely. And I'll add an name record for contoso.com. Let me exit out of there. If I go resolve the name, I'm going to get the answer back of 100.10. So I can manage that all using PowerShell. And if I go into DNS Manager, and this might be a little hard to read, but this is DNS Manager MMC. You can see I connected up to 100.5 earlier, and this was before I added the zones. All that was there was my demo zone. If I refresh this now, you'll see I have my contoso.com zone and my record for 100.10, which was the name I resolved here. So I can still use my MMCs to manage it, or I could use PowerShell. So it integrates with all your existing tool sets. As I mentioned, we've got the VMM and Operations Manager agents both available with technical preview 4 that came out last week. So let me switch back to the slides here. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about was the remote server management tools. So as I mentioned, we were creating a bunch of tools to replace all the things you can only do locally today on a server core machine based on all the feedback we've gotten around server core. And what we decided to do was make these all web-based so that you could run them from anywhere to remotely manage your machines. And so essentially what we started with was a list of things that are local only. And then you'll notice at the bottom of the list, we're going to start adding additional tools that are not local only. Essentially, we're going to start with the tools we get the most feedback about their performance on, like Event Viewer over a remote connection, and then we'll just keep adding more and more tools to this. So over time, this will replace your MMCs and give you a new modern interface that you can use to manage your servers. Now, the great thing about these tools is they also work to remotely manage server core and server with a desktop. So these are not specific to nano server. These will help you with remote management across all your server deployments. And they're all based, everything these tools do is based on WMI or PowerShell. And so everything they do, you can script up yourself. You can do remotely one-off if you want to. You could create your own UI on top of if you wanted to. So this is all, and this was where my mention of the plug and play WMI provider and module came in earlier, is that we have Device Manager, which is actually the highlighted thing on the screen, and I'll show it in a minute. So there's a new WMI provider for device management. So now you can remotely manage devices on your Windows Server 2016 machines. So again, this goes back to the separation of the GUI from the actual feature that you're managing. All the business logic gets separated out, the capability to automate it and script it becomes available. So Device Manager today is a local only tool. With this new WMI provider, not only can you manage it through the remote server management tools, but you can also script that up or use a command line through WMIC or PowerShell to manage your devices now. So let me flip back to my machine here and pull this up. So right now we have a technical preview of this available to our TAP customers. We're working to have a broad technical preview for all customers available early next year. But the implementation right now is all based in Azure. So I go up to the Azure portal. I've already created some connections here. And the way this works is all the UI runs in the Azure portal, so you don't have to deploy a bunch of servers on premises just to be able to manage your servers and run a bunch of UI pieces. What you do have to deploy in your data center is a small gateway. And essentially what that does is that pulls the Azure cloud in your subscription and gets any management requests, and then it's the one that communicates with all your servers. Then any data that needs to be returned is collected by the gateway from your servers and passed back up for you to view. And so in here, I've got a few different servers in my list. If I click this, I'll get more. But I know the first one on the list there is actually a nano server machine. So I'll open that up. And you can see the top part of the view is very task manager-like. And over here on the right side is sort of the much of the control panel type replacement. So if you go under computer identification, you get the computer name, and you can change that and do work group or domain join. If you go under properties, you can see what you have installed. I think this is actually a technical preview 3 machine still. And I know it's nano server because we haven't changed the branding there. Tuva is our code name. But it shows you a high-level view of it. You can go under administrators. You can create a new, add a new user to the admin account. You can go configure your network in here. So I have a couple of NICs set up here. I can go change between dynamic and static or change my IP address. Windows updates not implemented soon, but you can see how we're going to add more and more of the control panel capabilities in there. And then under sort of the task manager view here, if I double click on one of these, I get a more detailed view of the data. So see, as I scroll around here, it's showing me at different points in time the CPU percentage. And then down below, it's showing me the number of processes, threads, handles, you know, kind of the view you get in Task Manager. I can do the same under network adapters. Oops. I should have double-clicked on that. Do the same in network adapters, and if I had multiple, I'd get them in the list here, but here I can see my network adapter, my performance there, as well as my IP configuration. If I go under memory, I get the same sort of view. And then under disk, which is off by default, you can actually enable or disable it here, but if it was enabled, you'd get the disk view, performance view as well. Then under the tools at the bottom, this is where now you can see we're starting to replace some of the MMCs. So under processes, this is sort of a mixture, excuse me, between Task Manager, and you'll see it's very similar to services. You get the full list of processes here. But you'll notice as we go through these that there's a search to filter processes or search to filter services at the top of all these. So you can filter down quite easily using this. You can also add columns to add additional data to the view you have here. But you get all your standard activities when you right-click. You can do an end process, or you can create a process dump that you can then copy back to your local machine to analyze. Under services, you get a similar type view. Again, it's all the services, their state. You can filter. You can add additional columns. And if you right-click, you can actually get your stop, start, pause, resume service, much like you'd get in the services MMC. Registry editor gives you the ability to drill into the registry. So here, if we go under HK local machine, I expand this out. You can see it then gives me, and again, at the top of each of these, you get to filter down. So I can go under software, and go under Microsoft. And I'll get a much longer list here, and so I'll just go Windows. I go Windows, and I get right down to Windows NT. You can see how quickly that came up. I can go under current version. And in here, you'll see all the data under current version, including my product name, Windows Server Technical Preview 3 Tuva that we saw earlier. So let me navigate back here. So I close out of these. If I go into roles and features, that shows me what's installed and available on the system. If I go into PowerShell, it gives me a PowerShell remoting session into the machine, so I don't have to do the entropy session that I showed in the previous demo. It will automatically do that for me. So here I am connected in. I have PowerShell access to manage now. Event viewer is very similar to what you see in services. You have all your event logs. If I then I can use the same filter mechanism to find my security logs and drill into those if I wanted to. Then device manager gives you a view of all the devices on the system. So it's similar to the, device manager MMC snap-in. And you'll see here it defaults to opening up where you have any devices that require attention. And because this is a nano server VM, I don't have all the drivers installed for some of these things. And so it, basically that's what the warning's about. But if you can expand these out much like you would in Device Manager and drill into them, and it's going to show you the driver manufacturer date version. So you can and drill into device properties if you want. And again, this is all based on a new WMI provider. So you can do this via WMI and PowerShell remoting from any machine to any Server 2016 machine. So this is an early view of what we have available in the remote server management tools. And like I said, we're working to get a preview out broadly early next year. And so you'll be able to play around with that and give us feedback. We do have a video demo of it available on Channel 9 if you want to take another look at it. And this is being recorded if you want to go back and look at it in slow motion and see some of the things that are available in there. So from there, I'll move on. There's another new feature available in Windows Server 2016 that, again, is available across Server Core, Server with a Desktop, as well as a Nano Server. But it really helps in large-scale deployments or headless deployments. And so one of the reasons we built this was to help with Nano Server deployments. This is set up in Boot Event Collection. Essentially, what this lets you do is at boot time and setup time, any events will get streamed off your machine, KNET, the kernel debugger network, to a collector machine. And basically they get put into log files on the collector, and then you can use your analysis tools to go view those log files and see what happened in real time during the boot process or during setup. And so you could use, say, Message Analyzer to go look at the log files, and so you can, if you get a new hardware in and you're trying to provision it and for some reason it's failing to boot, you know, you don't know, you did something wrong in the unattend, maybe you don't have the right set of drivers or a driver's failing to load, you can use this to actually stream those events in real time, monitor that initial boot sequence and setup process and see where the failure is so you can correct it. That's going to be much easier than today. You know, you'd have to go find the machine in the data center. You'd have to boot into WinPE or something, copy the log files off, take them back to your desktop machine, analyze them, and, you know, sort of the back and forth of troubleshooting that. And one of the reasons we built this is one of the Microsoft services, as we were getting into Nano Server, we started talking to all the services around Microsoft that are doing things headless and remotely. And they had experienced that exact issue. They had gotten some new hardware that they could not get Windows Server to boot on. This was actually, I don't remember if they're using Server Core or Full Server, but it was before Nano Server. And they couldn't get it to boot. It kept failing, but they had bought these super small machines that had no video cards in them. And so they couldn't boot into something else to copy the logs off. What they ended up having to do was get out some power tools and cut a slot in the case of the top machine in the rack so that they could fit a video card in, because they were so small they didn't even have space for video cards. Plug a video card in so they could try and troubleshoot the issue. So if we had set up and boot eventing, they could have streamed those events off and seen them in the log files and not had to destroy the top machine in the rack. But this is available in both in Nano Server, Server Core, and Full Server as well, and is functional in Technical Preview 4. There's some documentation. There's a setup and boot event collection blog, as well as some documentation on the Nano Server blog. So just to recap on the Nano Server management, is really we're very focused on the DevOps mindset. Treat your server like cattle, not pets. You know, troubleshoot them as much as you absolutely have to, but then, you know, because Nano Server is so small, it's very easy to redeploy it. Spin up a new server instance and use that. You know, one of the goals is to eliminate the need to ever sit in front of a server. So we're building all these remote management capabilities, replacing a lot of things that don't have remote management functionality now, so you don't have to actually go physically touch the server or RDP into the server. You know, we're all for remote graphical management tools, but those should be run remotely. You know, that gives you the ability to take advantage of all the graphical capabilities on a machine where it makes sense and not have all those dependencies and require all those patches on a machine, on a server box where you don't want to have to reboot for UI. And then for remote management, we have PowerShell, WMI, and DSC to help you remotely manage the servers. So Now, Nano Server in Windows Server 2016, it is an installation option. I've probably mentioned that a couple times, but it's an installation option much like Server Core is today, and it will be available as part of standard data center and the Azure Stack product that was announced at Ignite back in May. Now, if you go download the ISO of Technical Preview 4 and run setup, you won't see Nano Server listed there. And the reason for that is the just enough OS approach that we're taking. To keep the image small, we had to remove plug and play. That has a lot of dependencies. So we didn't put all the drivers in the system, because otherwise on first boot, it would try and load every driver and it would be a slower boot process until it found the drivers it needed. So it's a separate folder on the media, and then you can customize the image to add the drivers you need. Now, we did create an OEM drivers package, which is essentially all the drivers available in Server Core, and so you can add those to your Nano Server image and create a customized image and create an image that you can use for testing in your labs and things like that. Ultimately, for the smallest, most focused Nano Server footprint, what you want to do is just inject the specific set of drivers that you need for your particular hardware. So there is a script that actually in Technical Preview 4 we've converted to a module to make it much easier to build an image, and you can in this PowerShell script specify the different roles or features you want, give it a path to where all the drivers are you need for your hardware, and it will build the image customized for you. It will also generate an inline 10 file, so you can set administrator name and password and everything in that for you. So it does everything you need to deploy, to create an image that you can deploy.
Hey, Andrew,
and it will, yes.
Those are pretty new PS1 scripts, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. That's like a training wheels.
Uh-huh.
It's training wheels.
Actually, that's Nano Server setup is the way to look at it.
Yep.
We had a version of them in Technical Preview 3, but in Technical Preview 4, we've added a lot more capabilities to them.
Nice. Excellent.
So if you go up and find the deployment guide for Nano Server on MSDN or TechNet, it has lots of details about how to use it, but it's pretty straightforward. I mean, we tried our best to follow all the PowerShell conventions.
Mm-hmm.
The PowerShell team has given us some feedback, so look for some more improvements coming. But yes, they're pretty straightforward. And it can create an image for both a physical machine or a virtual machine. Again, back to that just enough OS, even for a virtual machine, the guest drivers do consume some disk space and take up resources. So rather than have those in the image, you have to make a decision of, here are the drivers for my physical hardware, or I want the guest driver package. And then as far as customizations, because Nano Server is so small, there's a lot less that you have to configure or that somebody could misconfigure. But basically this slide shows sort of the customizations required that you might want to include in your Nano Server image. So as I mentioned, the set of drivers for your hardware, the virtual machine, whatever role or feature you want to run on the server, unless it's you want to add an app or something, you may not need a role or feature. Set your admin password, and then our focus so far has been all about building VHDs, either for running as a virtual machine or using for boot from VHD. And that's just because internally, you know, we get daily builds and everything. It's just easy to, with boot from VHD, you can swap your VHD around quite easily. But you could also just use a WIM and use a DISM apply image to apply an image to a physical machine. And so we'll have some more documentation on that coming soon, as well as add capability for that to our script. Then optionally, you can either let it, you know, auto-generate a computer name or set that. You can have it run commands on first boot. You can domain join Nano Server, and you can set up things like dual boot, emergency management services, or install third-party things. And the little asterisk there at the end of lines indicates the ones that the script does support today. And then as far as installing drivers, I think I mentioned this already. You know, the script does support this, but if you want to handcraft an image, DISM is the tool you would use. This isn't required because you can just create a folder and point the script at the folder and it will do all this for you. Or you can tell it to include the OEM drivers package. There's a switch for that. Installing roles and features. As I mentioned, here's the list of the features we have, as I mentioned earlier, they're all cabs, they're all separated from the base image. So compute is Hyper-V. We have container support now in Technical Preview 4. Data center bridging is there. I mentioned Defender already. I think most of the others I've mentioned. The storage package is essentially scale out file server, storage replica, those sorts of things are all contained within that. Reverse forwarders I'll talk about in a minute, and there's System Center Virtual Machine Manager agent at the bottom. But again, you can handcraft your image using DISM, or the script allows you to include any or all of those in your image. So NanoServer, again, because it's small and headless, we don't have any MSI support. So prior to Technical Preview 4, you either had to use Xcopy or a PowerShell script to inject any third-party code in that. In Technical Preview 4, we have a new capability called Windows Server. Actually, I need to fix this slide because we renamed it right before Technical Preview 4 from Windows Server Installer to Windows Server Application Installer. And that's in Technical Preview 4, but it does allow you to install third-party code. So we've been working with all the ISVs and OEMs for their driver tools and things to start making their tools available in this new format. This is based off of AppX. So anybody that's already building packages to install things on client, basically all this is AppX with some server-specific extensions that allow you to install things like services and other things that server apps will require. So we're building off, you may have noticed in my earlier demo that you saw the AppX service running and you may have seen the AppX commandlets. It's because we're using all the same commandlets. It's all based off of AppX. So we're being consistent and providing a story from that allows, you know, an OEM that may have a tool they want to install on client as well as server machines, they can write the same installer that will install it everywhere. Now I have said a few times that NanoServer is headless, and it is almost headless, 99.9% headless. We got a lot of feedback after Technical Preview 2 and going broad with NanoServer at Ignite in May that, you know, all this remote management is great, all these tools replacing things that I have to connect to the machine to do today, that's all awesome, but what if I've managed to remotely mess up my networking? You know, and then I can't use my remote tools. I don't necessarily always want to have to redeploy that server. And so what we've added is Emergency Management Console that we're renaming to Recovery Console because EMC has a conflicting acronym that we got lots of feedback on. People were confused every time we talk about EMC, thinking we were talking about storage and not the Emergency Management Console. So you'll see in the Technical Preview 4 builds is actually referred to as a Recovery Console. And this allows you to access a NanoServer machine if you have, you know, local keyboard, video, mouse, if you have a remote KVM available, if you have a BMC available, if you're running in a virtual machine, you can access the NanoServer machine and log on and fix your networking so that you can go back to remote management. And it is strictly focused on fixing the network. We're not going to add a bunch of configuration capabilities or other things there. It's use this if the networking's been misconfigured in some way so you can then go back and use your remote management tools. And so I have where did my mouse go? I have a NanoServer machine and a VM here. Unfortunately, because it's NanoServer, I can't resize it or anything, so hopefully it's at least legible.
Small, but
okay.
I could change my resolution on my Surface too, but we'll just go ahead.
Keep going
through it.
It's not that long a demo, so hopefully everybody will get the concepts. But you get a text mode logon prompt here where you enter your credentials, hit enter. You can see it's now NanoServer Recovery Console. It shows you this is a computer name, it's a member of a work group, the date and time, and it shows you for each network adapter you have, it will list the IP address configuration here. So you could scroll through it. You can tab over to networking, and here you would have a list of all your NICs that you could scroll through. You could select the one you want. You can view the IP configuration. And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, it will also show you the driver and version as well as manufacturer. Then down at the bottom, if you can see it, is you actually have F10 to edit the routing table. So if you've misconfigured the routing table, F11 lets you change your IPv4 settings and F12 IPv6. So if I hit F11, I can switch over to DHCP or I can edit my IP configuration. And then if I go back to the beginning, there's also the option currently to configure the firewall. So here's a list of all the firewall rules on the system, and you can go in and select one and either enable or disable it. So if you've also misconfigured the firewall and managed to block remote management, you can fix that through this as well. We are going to add more capabilities to this. We've gotten some requests around VLANs and vSwitches and stuff. So there's probably more functionality coming in the future. And then down at the bottom on the home page here, you can hit Control F6 or Control F12 to either restart or shut down. So if you need to just reboot the system, and again, for whatever reason, you can't do it remotely, you can do it cleanly through this. And Escape backs you out and logs you off. So that is the capability to do some limited network configuration to fix your system so you can go back to remote management. The next thing I want to talk a little bit about is NanoServer and application platform.